So it is now 3:30 in the afternoon, and if you're tuned in, we're moving on to the second episode of our four-episode series, Personal Political. The subtitle of this episode is One Way Mirror, and it is featuring myself, Andrea Schmid, KC Owen, Dylan Macarone, and Grant Holub Mormon. So yeah, all of the episodes of this series are dealing with a bunch of different issues in an attempt to do an autoethnography and a piece that has to do with a personal trouble and a political issue. And you'll see that each of us is kind of trying to reconcile both of those things. So tune in, and I hope you enjoy.
Jealousy by Dylan Macarone.
Okay, take two of Issa reading my journal entry.
I'd love to explore this polyamorous relationship I'm in currently. It's weird that sometimes I'm not at all uncomfortable with the idea of Issa hooking up with other people, especially if it's over break or something where we aren't together physically.
Sex. A practical guide to polyamory, open relationships, and other adventures. Many people dream of having an abundance of love and sex and friendship. Some believe that such a life is impossible and settle for less than they want, feeling always a little lonely, a little frustrated. Others try to achieve their dream, but are thwarted by outside social pressures or by their own emotions. A few, though, persist and discover that being openly loving, intimate, and sexual with many people is not only possible, but can be more rewarding than they ever imagined.
But other times, the idea makes me sick to my stomach and makes my heart pound. I just can't put my finger on why. The fact that I'm a man, the fact that I'm a man,
that I'm a man,
that I'm a man.
There's no trust.
That I'm a man.
No faith, no honesty in men.
That I'm a man.
All dissemblers.
That I'm a man.
No trust.
That I'm a man.
No honesty in men.
The fact that I'm a man, raised in a conservative setting, where monogamy is the only route, and jealousy in a relationship is considered healthy, makes me inclined to believe that this reaction and stress towards polyamory is cultural. At the same time, I can logic this problem all day, but that doesn't change the fact that I am very uncomfortable with my abilities to thrive in this form of relationship. The idea makes me sick to my stomach. Sick to my stomach. Sick to my stomach. Sick to my stomach. I'm a manifestation of being caught between the two ways of relationships.
Those who set off down the path of exploring new kinds of relationships and new lifestyles often find themselves blocked by beliefs. We have all been taught that one way of relating, lifelong monogamous heterosexual marriage, is the only right way. We are told that monogamy is normal and natural. If our desires do not fit into that constraint, we are morally deficient, psychologically disturbed, and going against nature. Many of us feel instinctively that something is wrong with this picture. But how can you dig up and examine a belief that you don't even know you hold?
So, in your current relationship with moi, one thing that we've talked about in the past is feeling like jealousy is very much a accepted thing in our culture and is considered healthy in a relationship. Are those your personal views?
No. No, I don't think so. Because I think a lot of what it comes from is this idea of, like, ownership over another person, and that you need to be, for some reason, completely committed and, like, sacrificial in giving up your, like, options or exploration. And it's been romanticized so much for decades, maybe, like, centuries. And that's why it's so hard to get over. But when you actually think critically about it, I wonder why that is something that is expected of people to give up.
For many people, the biggest obstacle to free love is the emotion we call jealousy. Many people believe that sexual territoriality is a natural part of individual and social evolution. If you believe that, it's easy to use jealousy as justification to go berserk and stop being a sane, responsible, and ethical human being. Threatened with feeling jealous, we allow our brains to turn to static with the excuse that we are acting on instinct.
What has been your experience dealing with jealousy?
Well, I can tell you about my first time experiencing jealousy in a relationship, because I remember it very clearly. The person I was seeing wanted to try being in an open relationship, and I wasn't too sure about it, but because I was really into them, I reluctantly agreed. And so one night, about a month into us dating, we went to a party together, and I was kind of nervous because I knew what the rules were with our relationship, and I didn't want that to happen. So for a while at the party, you know, we're dancing and we're with our friends and we're having a good time, and my worries are set aside for the most part. And I go outside for about 5 minutes just to catch a breath of air. And when I come back inside, I don't know where she is. She wasn't where she was earlier, so I search around. And I can remember the music rising, the song rising, as I'm looking for her. And right as the tension is all the way peaked, and as the chorus drops, I remember seeing her dancing, kissing with someone else. And I felt really nauseous. I felt like I was gonna throw up. My heart was pounding. And for whatever reason, I just started to panic, and I had to leave. And that was pretty hard. And ever since then, I've had a lot of anxiety and stress related to that, to seeing the person I'm with someone else.
One thing that we've talked about in the past is different levels of comfortability with different genders. And I'd really like to explore that a little bit. What exactly makes you comfortable about me being with women versus men, knowing that I identify as queer?
Yeah, that's probably like the biggest self-criticism I have of this, that when I think of you potentially like telling me that you're going to hook up with someone, and my like imaginings of that when it's you and another woman, it is pretty fine with me, and I'm pretty like not jealous and not threatened by that. But it hasn't happened yet, so I don't know for sure if I would be. But when I'm imagining, if you like came to me and said that there was like a guy that you've been flirting with that you wanted to have sex with or you know, do something like that with, then I would feel like way more uncomfortable. I would definitely start to feel that like self-loathing and not, you know, not good enough. Yeah, and I don't know why that is in me, but if someone else were to tell me that they were experiencing that and ask me why, I would think the reason is that men are supposed to be in constant competition with each other in every aspect of life.
In our culture, we value ownership of things. When we think something is beautiful, we want it to be ours instead of seeing its beauty and value as independent from ourselves. This element of possessiveness becomes manifested in our relationships. when one person feels that their connection with the other is threatened by releasing control. It's considered a sign of love, affection, and commitment to want to keep someone for yourself and to become jealous or envious of any perceived competition. But to us, a true sign of love is not to cage your lover's heart, but to give them the wings to fly, a connection to come back to, and a reason to stay. To us, true love is doing what seems impossible and saying, I'm going to let go.
Like you were saying, like what is a romantic relationship? And part of what being poly is recognizing that all of these terms that we've created make no sense. Is it possible to have a romantic relationship and not be physically intimate? Is it possible to have friendships that you consider soulmates? Like, what exactly do all these words mean? And I think that one thing that has always kind of, like, stuck with me is that I was always taught that you can't love one child more than the other. It's just a different kind of love, and each person has a different kind of love to offer you.
We can't tell you how to banish your jealousy or how to exercise it as if it were a demon. It may be your inner demon, but it is not a cancer that you can cut out. It is a part of you, a way that you express fear and hurt. The challenge comes in learning to establish within yourself a strong foundation of internal security that is not dependent on sexual exclusivity or ownership of your partner. This difficult work is part of the larger question of how to grasp your personal power and learn to understand and love yourself without such a desperate need for another person to validate you. We suggest most strongly that you put some effort into learning to validate yourself. Believe us, you're worth it.
Okay, do you want to sign off?
The next one, stay tuned, because we will be talking about our sex life.
Probably not.
So that was Jealousy by Dylan Macaron. Yeah, so that was really great. And we have the producer here.
Hi.
As himself. So, Dylan, can you tell us what... I guess, like, I'm curious. So this was a very personal, political thing. I mean, I think it was a really good embodiment of that. What did you learn about yourself, like, through the process? And This can be in terms of sound editing, but also just like trying to, you know, figure out what you want to say in this piece because it's so broad.
Something that I'm realizing right this very second that I learned from this piece is that when you're editing a really personal piece in the basement of the library and you're all alone, then you don't really have to think as much about how embarrassing it'll be to play it to a room full of your peers and your professor and then broadcast it on the radio for who knows how many people to hear. So when I play it by myself, I'm like, oh, this is fine. This is great. I'm not embarrassed of any of this. Whereas right now, I'm very self-conscious. But... So I guess that the production versus the performance aspect of it is something that I'm learning. But I guess it's good that I don't have the reception in mind when I'm first making it.
That's really, yeah, I feel, so do you think that you're less critical when you cast it out into Sonic Universe? Or do you think, do you know what I mean? Because I feel like when I'm editing, I'm so much more critical. And once it's done and I know that other people are listening to it, I feel like I have so... I feel like I ought to feel more self-conscious, but I'm actually not, because there's nothing I can do about it anymore.
I think I... When I'm alone editing it, I'm really highly critical of, like, the quality of the work and just, like, the precision and the sound editing and things like that. And I'm less critical and self-conscious about the content and who... and how like the aspects of who I am are interplayed with me producing something of this content, and whose voices I'm using and who I'm potentially speaking for. Whereas when I put work like this out there, especially in a room full of other people, that becomes more apparent on just what I said, just whose voices I'm using, whose stories I'm telling, things like that.
Great, thank you. So that was great. And now we are moving on to the second episode of this sub episode. Stay tuned.
This piece is called Anyone by Casey Owen. Content warning before the piece. This piece involves descriptions of catcalling, binding, and gender dysphoria, as well as bullying. My dad had this Henry Ford quote when I was a kid. He used to say, "You can have any color car you like, so long as it's black." It was from when the Ford company only made black cars. I was a lousy decision maker as a kid. I'd be standing in front of the candy aisle staring. My father would say, "Anyone you like, so long as it's black." I never made picking any easier. 1 0 1 0 1 0 The gender binary is a model of gender that classifies all people into one of two genders. Under the binary, gender is seen as a rigid binary option, like 1 or 0. The gender binary says there can be no more than two genders, with no shades of gray between the two. A person can only be one or other option, not both, neither, or something in between the two. Not one, neither, or something between the two. One or the other. Pick one. There's just one option. Pick, choose. Pick, choose. Pick, choose, pick, choose.
0 1 0
I had short hair when I was little, and I'd get that question.
Are you a boy or a girl? Which one are you? Look like a boy. Which one are you? Why do you look like a boy? Are you a boy or a girl? Which one are you?
Back of the bus interviews, kids peering over the seats. Well, what are you? I was a lousy decision maker as a kid. The binary pushes us into these very defined boxes. When I was younger, I'd pretend to be a boy so I could throw snowballs. And I got this black baklava, and I'd wear it before I went out for recess so that people wouldn't know I was a girl. And I had a black coat, too. So I looked like this masked ninja or assassin or something, throwing snowballs. I'd really throw them hard. And I'd throw them in their faces. And they'd get so mad. And when they were about to yell at me or get a teacher, I'd take off this mask. And they realized I was a girl. And they couldn't do shit about it. 'Cause girls can't hurt you. I'm 19 now. It's different now. I got catcalled for the first time last summer. I was walking with my mom, and this guy just started yelling at me. He told me I was beautiful. He said, "Hey, you're so goddamn beautiful. So goddamn beautiful, and I'd love to fuck you. Hey, hey, I'm talking to you. You're so goddamn beautiful. You are so goddamn beautiful. Goddamn beautiful. Goddamn. 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 Hey. Hey. You're so goddamn beautiful. So goddamn beautiful. I'd love to fuck you. I'd love to fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. I'd love to fuck you. You're so goddamn beautiful." I was walking with my mom, and he just started yelling at me. He told me I was beautiful. I was walking with my mom. I started binding after that. Not all the time. Just when I don't want to be reminded of what being a woman is. Or that I wasn't really given an option. It looks like a tank top. I pull it over my head and it compresses my chest. It can be hard to breathe in it sometimes, if I wear it for too long. When I take it off, it leaves red marks on my back. And when I take it off, it leaves red marks on my back.
So, that was our second episode, and we have the producer of this episode, Casey.
Hey.
So, I guess I wanted to ask you, this piece is really cool because I think it, I mean, not only is it really, like, in an attempt to think about the personal and the political, it has two things. It has the gender binary, but it also has, like, verbal abuse.
Right, or like the sexualization of women's bodies and all that stuff.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, it was really good, but I also find it, and this is the second time I'm hearing it, even though you've changed it a little bit, and it's hard to listen to both times.
Thank you.
But like in a good way.
No, I know. I want this, that was, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean. But do you feel better after making it?
Oh, that is such a good question. I think... I don't. I think I feel worse. I feel like it's like when you do therapy and like they first ask you about like the hard stuff and you have to like go to the bottom and then like work your way back up. I feel like this piece like really put me into the bottom.
Yeah.
Like I definitely got sadder after making this.
Yeah. Because I feel like there's this, I don't know, I've talked to a few people about their pieces and some people say that there was like this like healing, you know, that happened when you... Especially if you're dealing with something that's really personal. But I feel like this is really definitely one of those things where it's really hard to find that. And, like, the reconciliation. I mean, feeling like there's something good. It's not changing. Maybe it's something that you might, like, reconcile within yourself, but this is, like, such a big problem
right.
beyond, like, your person, too. And it's, like, I don't know. I don't think that matters, really, because this is about you. But you know what I mean?
No, I totally get it. Yeah, and it's, like, sometimes saying things out loud is really hard. Yeah. When I didn't expect to say any of this out loud. And now it's very loud because it's in the air.
Yeah. Do you have anything else that you'd like to talk about or share about your process? Sound, really good sound editing.
Thank you. Yeah. I think my process was I recorded most of this under my desk with a blanket, like, covering so that I was just in this dark, hot, small box. And I think that's really important, like, process. That's really important to my process, is being in a very scary, small place.
Why do you think it's important? What would it do if...
I think if we're going to, like... It's like I'm already in the metaphorical box, and so I need to, like, be in a real box to, yeah. like, say it out loud. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. Okay, cool. Do you have any questions, Grant? You don't have...
I'm interested in the scripting process, actually. I know you mainly... Oh, somebody just...
Congratulations. Wonderful.
I know that Casey works a lot more in writing, and I'm interested how that process translated to something that you knew would eventually end up having to be vocalized.
Yeah, I usually do writing, but a lot of my writing is... I think it's because, like, I have dyslexia, so, like, growing up, the way that I learned how to read was, like, saying it as I read it, and so I do, in my head, think out loud, or, like, I think about reading it out loud when I write stuff, and so when I wrote it just in one big, long stream of consciousness, and I think I was thinking, I was reading it as I was writing it in my head out loud.
And did it sound differently in your head than it did when you finally heard the piece that you created?
I think it did, but mostly just because I hate my voice. And so it just sounded worse out loud. Because in my head, my voice sounds a lot prettier than than out in the world.
I think a lot of people deal with that. I definitely did. Great, so thanks, Casey. And now we're moving on to Grant's piece. Stay tuned for sub-episode number 3.
White Noise, Sound Sleep by Grant Hollop Mormon. My brother was allergic to southern air. Each April he drowned in the loblolly pines and red maples. I powdered my face with the yellow-green sickness. The neighbor kids, too. On window sills and car hoods we cussed and wrote our names. In my home, windows stayed clamped shut. Doors shut even quicker. And the air purifier always on, else the night filled with brothers sneezing. That air purifier always running in our bedroom. My brother and I set on high, super if it hadn't rained in a while, which filled the room with hush. At night, and that day, always the white noise. Sound sleep was ours to claim. Bedposts planted deep in the red clay.
Whose blood is this?
Our room pardoned itself from the tragedy upon Catawba, which it lay.
Wackamasuan.
Catawba. Our house Wackamasuan. In a neighborhood, our town built to stay. All I heard was the blower's simple lullaby, hushing it all to a mellow sigh. We closed that frontier and settled that land.
All I heard was the blower's simple lullaby.
What corpses did we carry here instead of food?
What graves do we dig before building homes?
All I heard was the blower's simple lullaby, hushing it all to a mellow sigh.
Now that I'm here. Yes, here. It's harder to escape the sounds that surround me. None of it's land I can safely claim anymore. The raids are expected at nightfall. Go to sleep. 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 The frontier is open. And I can't return home. The frontier is open. And I can't return home. There's another in my bed. There's another in my bed.
Who is it?
Who is it? Who is it? Who is it? Who is it? What do they want? Why are you here disturbing my sleep? Why are you here disturbing my sleep? What do I need to do for you? What should I do for you? What do you think I should be doing for you? What do I want to do for you? Hold you? Tell me a story. Tell me a story! Listen to your story? That's one I surely haven't heard before. What do you want from me? My story? One you've certainly heard before. Make you small, make you feel good, make you squirm. Hold you so you can't move at all. Grow. 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 You and me. Who am I with you? Who am I without? Gradually sleeping better than when you first came into my bed. But better than before? Probably not. But I can't remember any longer. This is my bed now. And you are here with me. And here I am with you. Whose blood is this?
Whose bed was this before? Why is it mine now?
Whose blood is this?
Whose was it before? Shall they join us, three on this single mattress? Three, maybe four, six, maybe 7 million, another bed? Another bed. Another bed. Bring it here. I'll bring it here. I'll sleep over there. Does anyone want to sleep here? I have no place to sleep. Next to you? I don't know if I can. Are you sure you want that? If you think it's all right. Can we share when we sleep at different hours? Can we share when we both sleep on our stomachs? Can we share holding hands, arms wrapped around one another, your hair pushing into my nostrils, stifling my sleeping breaths? Hello? I'm awake now.
I'm awake now. I'm awake now. I'm awake. I'm awake. When is it? What's changed? My fan. Where's my fan? Who turned it off? Can I turn it back on? Maybe I shouldn't. Somebody turned it off once. I shouldn't make them do it again. I might need the silence. I can't sleep.
So that was Grant's piece, and here he is.
Hello, hello.
Such a distinguished voice.
I do my best.
So I wanted to ask you, and I had this question last time I heard your piece. What is the relationship between the blowing fan and the air purifier?
Oh, they're the same.
What? No. I know that's the same. Okay. And
oh, air purification. Oh, so.
So what's the, like, what does that symbolize? And then you know what I mean, with everything else? Because you talk about it a lot in the beginning and, like, the hush and, like, anyway, could you just talk about that? Because I was always really curious about.
Sure. I kind of began this process by thinking about my dependence on, like, a machine to sleep, and something that has, like, no utilitarian function. It was originally, like, to keep the air clean so that my brother wasn't, like, always sneezing and coughing and, like, just crying through the night because of all the pollen. And then I just, like, I guess became addicted to it. And, like, I needed it every single night.
Like, to sleep and, like, the sound almost became, yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, I brought a fan to college, which was nice. Like, couldn't hear my roommate when he, like, came in late at night. But then I started thinking about how it keeps out sounds or, like, warning signs. Like, I can sleep with, like, sirens going on outside because that thing is covering up that noise. I don't notice other people in the room. And I started kind of relating that white noise to, like, my white privilege, and how the space that's created for people like me allows us to kind of ignore the needs and the needs of others, and how we carve out white space in on land that we have no claim to.
Yeah. Okay. That's really great. No, that's an excellent metaphor. Okay. Cool.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for that. And I wanted to ask you, like, do you feel better after doing this piece?
I think this was ripping off the Band-Aid, you know? I've got a lot of work to do. Absolutely. I think being in college is kind of like that process of exploring, like, how you exist in the world. And then once you leave college, you kind of have the ability to change, hopefully for the better, and make sure that your presence isn't as damaging.
Yeah. Okay.
At least for me. As a privileged white cis man in this world, like, I think that's one thing that I can gain from an education.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay. So it sounds like you are maybe in a more complicated place than you were before you started the piece.
Yeah, that's good. I think complication is good.
Yeah. It doesn't have to. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Cool. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm now going to introduce my piece. It is called Hondureña Activista Mujer. So, Honduran Activist Woman. Stay tuned. Hondureña Activista Mujer by Andrea Schmid. I first heard about Berta Cáceres after coming across a particular newspaper article a year ago. It read,
Honduras now has the highest murder rate for environmental activists in the world, and conflict over land rights is the primary driver. Rampant inequality, a weak judicial system, cozy relationships between political and business elites, and near total impunity for crimes against human rights defenders have contributed to 101 murders of environmental activists between 2010 and 2014. The Global North's rapacious demand for natural resources is fueling conflict on indigenous lands throughout the developing world. But in Honduras, corruption, organized crime, political instability, and increasingly militarized policing have created a particularly acute crisis.
He has the blood of Berta Cáceres. He has the blood of Nelson Garcia. ¡Estoy aquí, va!
When I was home over spring break, my mom mentioned that she wanted to start an environmental blog. But I don't want to end up like Berta Cáceres, she said, as the only condition. I told her that this wouldn't happen to her, because she's not indigenous, and because she would never have to risk her life for a community in the same way that Berta Cáceres did, because our lives do not depend on the health of a single water source. I'm going to Honduras this summer. I plan on being there for 2 months, conducting fieldwork for my thesis. I plan on studying in the western part of Honduras, known as El Corredor Seco, or the Dry Corridor. It's currently experiencing one of its worst droughts in recorded history. I'm not an environmental activist. I don't think that I feel comfortable with that term for myself. I would say that I'm an environmentalist and a researcher. I think the term activist has other implications. It means doing direct action, getting involved outside of academic work like papers and essays, and dialogues that are safe and conducted in safe spaces such as classrooms. I've never done activism outside of this way. I feel even more uncomfortable with this term when I think about activists who do activism because it's part of their livelihood and survival. And I think there's this idea that doing activism is a choice for most people, or a side job, or even a hobby. Maybe here. But that's really not the case. So when people tell me that I'm doing activism through my research, that could be it, I think. I think that I'm contributing to knowledge, and that's activism in some way. But when I think about Berta Cáceres, and when I think about what she did, I'm at loss of words in terms of comparing myself to her. I don't think I would do what Berta Cáceres did. I think I would have to find myself in a very different and difficult situation to put myself at such risk. And I wonder, would she do what she did if it wasn't a matter of survival to her community's reality? Maybe. I'm not really sure, though. So this is why I would not like to be called activist, at least for the time being.
Que es patrimonio no solo del pueblo lenca, sino que de este país. Y ha sido entregado a manos privadas por más de 20 años a una empresa que ha mandado.
The people of the Goldman Foundation knew you were at risk when you were awarded the prize. The video they made about you almost seemed like a eulogy. It came out less than a year before you were murdered.
Honduran indigenous and environmental organizer Berta Cáceres has been assassinated in her home. She was one of the leading organizers for indigenous land rights in Honduras.
Why do people become famous after they're killed? What is it about martyrdom and the way that death emphasizes the urgency of a cause? It was then that I saw your name in all the right front covers of all the right media outlets. NPR, Democracy Now, Mother Jones, BBC, The Nation, The Guardian. They all loved you, and they loved the story that you let them tell. I want you to know that the church on Main Street had a vigil for you the week after you died. And I want you to know that I saw the most diverse demographic of Hispanics that I had ever seen in a space there. They understood. It was Easter the next day, and I went to Mass on my own for the first time. Why does so much suffering need to happen for the global North to have clarity? Why do I need to see unpleasant things, feel unpleasant, and finally leave the root of that sadness to understand my own condition? I want to ask you what it felt like to be brave. Did you feel brave when you led that anti-hydro dam blockade? You, a woman in Honduras, a mother of four children with a mother to care for? Why was I told I was brave the other day? And why am I comparing myself to you to prove that I'm not?
She was shot to death at her home on March 3rd. In a statement, Honduran police said the two killings were unrelated. They called Nelson Garcia's murder a, quote, isolated act, but Honduran activists disagree.
But do you think that the police killed her?
No se sabe. No te sé decir, pues. O sea, I have to do research on that. Pero no tengo la frankly no tengo la menor idea.
Ten buses of indigenous and black Hondurans were reportedly stopped en route to the capital. Activists said some began walking toward Tegucigalpa after being forced to leave the buses. In the capital, demonstrators walked past the Mexican embassy to show solidarity with Gustavo Castro Soto, the sole witness to Berta Cáceres' murder, who remains inside the embassy. After Cáceres died in his arms at her home.
The police are corrupt, the government's corrupt, and the entire country is owned by 10 to 15 families. How can impoverished people of a country survive?
Why is everyone so afraid to think about the answer? It was late at night, and they waited for her to fall asleep to make it easier for them. I'm afraid too, but it is the least that I can do. What does it mean to be Honduran? A woman? An activist? A single one of these is not enough. Honduras, I am coming to you, and I will soon leave you. I'm not sure if I will miss you. Though when I leave you, I always find that I do. It's hard to decide if I want to have everything to do with you, or nothing at all. So, we are at the end of our episode. So you've listened to four different podcasts talking about very different personal and political problems, and we're going to move on to our third episode of Personal Political. We hope that you enjoy this, and we hope that you stay tuned for more. Thank you. See you.